This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Chunky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app. Download it. You can take us on the go wherever you may be. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by our friends at Crop Metcalf, the official heating and air conditioning company of the Junkies. Congratulations to AJ in Vienna. He scored tickets to Caps Game 1 against the Hurricanes here, of course, in Round 2 of the NHL playoffs. AJ in Vienna, congratulations. We will give away more tickets later this hour.
That's what we
do. So stay tuned.
How happy was AJ from Vienna, Travi? Oh.
Sure,
ecstatic.
He's pumped.
Yeah.
I bet.
Fired up. Let's go.
All right, still giving away.
As fired up as you, though.
We're giving away another set, right?
Yeah, yes.
9 o'clock out.
All right, join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMVs. Our pal Barry Zverluga from the Washington Post. Barry recently wrote about how he believes DC needs a better deal in this whole RFK deal.
Big stick in the mud, this Barry Zverluga.
And EB posited that you were calling out JP Finley and Grant Paulson in your article specifically, though you didn't use their last name.
That's true.
Say you, Barry?
I'm guilty as charged on that one, man. Little subtle kind of pulling back, being a stick in the mud, getting against all the cheerleading. I just think... I mean, we don't have to talk about this long, but I kind of feel like there's a time for celebrating this deal, and that's when it's done, not before it's done. Like, this feels like a starting point with the council is going to push back on the mayor. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Doesn't mean there's not going to be a stadium at the RFK site. It felt like she held the victory party before there was a victory.
Well, I'm sure she did it for a reason. You know, they're all calculated. But let me just say for the record, I generally agree with your sentiment, you know, on the whole, that, like, we can't just spend for stuff all the time. It's got to come from somewhere. It comes from the taxpayers. And I think we all agree the government spends too much money. Most people think that. So, yeah, I mean, somebody's got to be smart about it. But hopefully they figure it out. Do you think at the end of the day they will figure it out, though?
I do, yeah. I mean, it only takes 7 votes, and they've got 4 solid yeses and some maybes amongst them. I feel like, you know, the yeses, the maybes will become yeses when the deal tilts a little bit away from the Commanders and toward the citizens of the district. I mean, I think people are a little bit distracted by the extremely large number of $2.7 billion that Josh Harris and his group is putting in, and looking away from the really, really large number of $1 billion plus that would come from the district. Like, they're trying to say the percentage of public money is small compared to other stadiums, and that's true, but the actual dollar amount is second amongst NFL stadiums that have opened since 2009, only trailing the Tennessee Titans project that's insanely funded by public money. So I think it's a discussion. I think we're in the middle of the discussion, and we're just, anybody who thinks this is done is not really paying attention.
You know, this is certainly above our pay grade, and I'm not even sure I can articulate my question. But, like, you know, when they say, okay, it's going to cost this, but it's going to bring this kind of revenue in, can they articulate how the residents who pay for this will see that benefit? Like, if they could say, hey, this amount of money is going to go back into the public schools, the money that we generate, then it's a little bit more palatable, right? If you knew where the money that you allege is coming in is going to come back to us in some measure.
Agreed. And like, what's the kind of balance scale there that would tip the thing in the favor of a resident of the District of Columbia? And, you know, as we know, living here, this is such a unique place because the district and its 700,000 residents don't have a state government to also supply some of the funds that, you know, if you build a stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts or Nashville, Tennessee, you know, you can get public dollars from more than one source. And it's also going to draw in people. Like, that's why I said Grant from Virginia and JP from Maryland, because they're both, and I love both those guys. I'm not against them. I'm poking fun at them. Like, people from Maryland and people from Virginia can sit there and say, oh, this is great. It's going to RFK. Like, yeah. I have all these romantic notions about it, and they're not paying a dime for it.
Right,
so, and that doesn't make me, it's just the logistics of our region. It's very, very strange that these three separate, very separate jurisdictions have a vested interest in this one thing that only one of those entities is going to pay for.
Are you live in the district, correct?
Capitol Hill, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So are you, have you kind of figured out or done the math on how much your taxes will increase? Have you talked to people about that?
Zero idea. I really don't know. And that's kind of part of, it's part of like why I feel like we're in the middle of this. And also, Jason, some of it is taxes on businesses. And so what is the business community who thought that they were going to stop paying this ballpark tax that originated from Nationals Park, but, you know, which opened in 2008, and the tax came in when they made the deal in late 2004, early 2005 to bring the Nationals here? Like, that was supposed to expire. And I don't know, and I haven't done the reporting, so I'm not going to say businesses are up in arms. But, you know, if you're a small business or a middle-sized business or a large business in the district, and you expected that tax to go away in a couple of years, are you just going to roll along with the idea that you're going to continue to pay it? I don't know.
Barry, is it a coincidence? Is there a link with this supposed announcement today that DC is going to host the draft? Does that put more pressure, give the city more leverage, et cetera? Or is it just a complete coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence in one way, that it's just like DC was probably going to get a draft, whether there was a stadium deal in place or not. I think that the thing that ties it together, a term sheet for a stadium deal and the draft being granted to DC for 2027, is that, I mean, Josh Harris's ownership tenure is different than Dan Snyder's. Like, so much stuff is more available to you. People will deal with you because you are an upstanding member of the NFL community. You are an upstanding member of the local community, the district and Virginia and Maryland. Like, all things are possible because Dan Snyder doesn't own the team anymore. And that's kind of a broken record, but we keep getting, you know, data points that reinforce that they're going to have a draft on the National Mall, which, I'm sorry, Detroit, I'm sorry, Green Bay, like, this is an iconic scene. Like, that's awesome for DC. And also, Eric, like, you know, it's just a one-off, right? Like, it's 3 days, or maybe they make it a whole week. That's a lot different than saying, like, we're going to put the 65,000 seat stadium in a neighborhood in your city. This is an event. But, you know, what other events could the district hold if that stadium happens? Like, you guys have talked about it, Final Fours, like concerts, like all that kind of
stuff. The Olympics. I mean, you know, it's limitless almost.
Well, and I mean, I think it's terrible that there's a domestic World Cup next year. I'm not a huge soccer guy, but there's a domestic World Cup next year, and Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, it should be in consideration to host the title game. Like, the thing that everybody in the world watches, and it's just like, no, they're not part of, you know, that would change if that stadium's out there.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, once you put a new stadium out there, I mean, you're getting the Super Bowl, you're getting World Cup, you're getting a ton of events. Now, I don't know if you're going to get 200 a year, like they said.
200's a joke.
I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, you might get some office parties if you want to add those, but you're not going to get 200.
I mean, I looked at the calendar for, like, MetLife in New York and Jerry World down in Dallas, just to see. And they have, you know, there are things like in Texas, you can have these big rodeo fests and stuff like that. But literally one of the things on their calendar was a blood drive. Like, does that count as 200, one of the 200 events?
Apparently so it does.
I call Pinocchio's on that one.
Now, if it got really bad, would you move out of the city? Have you thought about that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I've endured the pandemic, like,
okay,
things got
stay.
Rough
right.
in the neighborhood. Yeah. And I'm not adamant, like, no stadium. I think it could be kind of cool. I mean, I was the, you know, Nats beat writer almost walking to RFK from my house when things were there every night. I think it's kind of cool to provide some juice to the neighborhood. And I like the idea of the Washington NFL team being in Washington, D.C. I think the deal needs to tilt a little bit more toward the people who live here.
All right. So did you have another draft question? I'm sorry.
No. I mean, I
was going to switch to the Caps.
Yeah, I was going to say, Barry can talk about everything.
Let's switch to the Caps. I don't know how Cakes feels. He's usually pretty overly confident.
Tell you how I feel. I feel a little bit disrespected that the Hurricanes are the favorites, not only in game one, but in the entire
series.
I feel like that's disrespect to the one seed. And I know playoff hockey can go sideways. Just look at last night's Winnipeg
Blues.
Jets, St. Louis Blues game. But I'm feeling disrespect heading into this series. I don't know about you, Barry.
Barry, I told him that Vegas has the Hurricanes as minus 150 to win the series. That's a pretty significant number.
That seems high.
Yeah.
I mean, feels like a... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, obviously, you know, Vegas just sets a number and they want to get bets on both sides, but they clearly feel like the Hurricanes are the best team. They didn't make the Caps minus 150. So the Hurricanes scare me. They just do. And I don't know a ton about hockey. I mean, I know a little bit, but the Hurricanes as a team, they just scare me. They're well coached. They play, they're sound. You know, I think that they're not great on the power play offensively, but they're great on the kill. So this might be a shootout series, but man, the Hurricanes scare me.
I think it's like even money, toss a coin. And
you might be right. Yeah.
I get what Cakes is saying. Like, and I feel like that fits the kind of overarching theme of the Caps season. Like they underwent a major roster overhaul last summer, a summer after they had to win a tight game in the 82nd game of the season just to get into the playoffs and be swept by the Rangers. And I felt like going into the season, everybody was like, oh, it's that same Caps team that struggled to make the playoffs. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. And they didn't give Brian McClellan and Chris Patrick credit for not only changing the roster, but changing it in an extremely well thought out, planned way in which they checked every box that was on their board. And I think, Cakes, what's happened is it felt like everybody else, that the, you know, hockey cognoscenti in Toronto and Canada has kind of looked at this whole cap season as kind of fluky, which after 82 regular season games in which they were the best team in the Eastern Conference and Ovechkin passed Gretzky to be the all-time goal scorer and five tight but successful games for them in the playoffs, it seems, I don't want to be homerish, and I'm not saying they're going to win the series, but it does feel like they're not getting the respect for who they are and how they've played. They are a very, very solid team. I mean, Jason, you're right. Like, is Carolina solid? Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think in Raleigh, they're probably waking up and being like, well, this Caps team can roll four lines at you, and they still have Ovechkin on the power play, and Pierre-Luc Dubois is a really good two-way center, and their defensive pairings it really makes sense, even though, you know, they've got a major injury there.
And we got one of the best goalies in the league.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. Spencer Carberry said the other day at practice, like, when two teams know each other this well and they're this evenly matched, the three things that will decide it are goaltending, and Logan Thompson's playing great. Special teams, so what you mentioned about, you know, how do the Caps break through against a very good penalty kill, and how does their own kill do against the Canes' power play? And then secondary scoring, which is, you know, not the Ovechkin, Wilson, you know, the top lines with Strome and those guys, but down the lineup, do you get Duhaime goals like you did in the Montreal series? Like, do those third and fourth lines produce some unexpected offense? Like, you're playing in the margins here, and I think it would be surprising if this, it was really good for them to get rid of the Canadians in five games, I'd be shocked if this series didn't go six or seven.
Hey, Barry, you mentioned the front office and the job that they've done to put this team around Ovi. It's not, wasn't just a celebrate Ovi as he chases Gretzky. You know, like, this is a team that was the top team in the East. The moves that they've made, they've just been hitting home run after home run, going back to signing Strome off the street a few years ago, trading for Chychrun, Bevilier at the trade deadline. And you touched on a name that the Capitals were mocked for trading for this guy, Luc Dubois. He has been awesome. And people were like, he's a cancer in the clubhouse. He wears that as welcome. I don't know if it's just that he came to the right place because this is a really well, you know, close-knit team, a close-knit group that Carberry has kind of assembled. But, man, the personnel moves have been, like, on point for this team.
Yeah, and, you know, to get Pierre-Luc Dubois, they traded Darcy Kempner, who is a Vezina finalist. So this is a trade that worked out for both sides. But I would say, Cakes, that Dubois and any sort of cancerous stuff, like, what's happened in Washington is that and I don't like to overuse the word culture when it comes to a team, but, like, that you entered that locker room and you have to fit into what they have established. You're not going to come in and throw elbows and be like, no, I do it my way, because, you know, Nick Backstrom and TJ Oshie and Alex Ovechkin and John Carlson over the years have put into place a very, very businesslike but fun organization. So I think a guy like Dubois, who has all sorts of talent but has been, you know, bumped around from place to place, comes in and has no choice really but to fit in. And then, I mean, I give him credit because Carberry will tell you, like, he wants to match up against the toughest line to match up with on the other team. And he was the one taking the Suzuki line in the Canadian series. That was a really, really important matchup for defensively for Washington. And he embraces it. It's not just about how many assists he has and how much offense his line produced, and he can produce. Like, he made a high-end pass to Chychrun to score a goal in the deciding game against Montreal, but he'll go two ways and set a tone that way. And it's just, that's one of a litany of really, really solid moves that they made in the offseason.
I don't feel like, and I'm not talking about you, Barry. I'm talking about the four of us. I don't feel like we give Chris Patrick enough credit. We don't say his name enough. And I don't know what his role is compared to McClellan. I know McClellan is the director of hockey ops. But Patrick's the GM, and he's only been the GM a couple of years. And in the last 2 years, this is when the roster has gotten really good. I feel like Chris Patrick had to have had a ton to do with that. That's just my gut.
So I would say that,
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, they are really good about saying how collaborative they are, and really, like, it's a entire front office
right
effort. But I just logistically, Patrick didn't become the GM until after all these offseason moves this past summer. So okay. Like, this was really McClellan's.
So it was all BMAC. All right.
Well, I mean, it was them together, and then Chris moved in. But I, you know, I was at a game at some point during the year and saw Chris, and I was like, nice team you put together here. And he was like, thanks. Mac did everything. All I have to do is put on a suit. So really, this next coming off season is Chris's first in the big chair, and this trade deadline was his first in the big chair. So he gets credit on Bevilier and being. What a good fit that is, a guy who can play up and down the lineup to the point where Protas comes back in, a guy who's been in the top six forwards all year, and you're like, no, we can't move Bevilier off the Strome and Ovechkin line because he's been too good there. Like, really, really solid on the cheap pickup.
Real quick, last thing, do you think the 6 days will be good? I think it'll be good for the Caps, 6 days off.
Yeah, I think so too, and the Canes are really in a similar boat just one day later.
Right.
So, you know, you can't say there's an imbalance there. But at this time of year, with how hard these games are, how physically taxing they are, I think, you know, rest for, you know, put, like, a John Carlson or an Alex Ovechkin in particular is a very, very good thing.
All right, Barry, good stuff. It's Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Barry.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yep. Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Coming up next, we'll open up EB's Entertainment page. And remember, still have Caps tickets to give away later this hour.